Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on The Conversation. We are broadcasting live from Lahaina, Maui on this Monday, August 5th, as this week we mark 1 year since the devastating wildfires. We focus on recovery and healing, and throughout the week we'll be taking a closer look at Lahaina Harbor. 100 boats once called it home, most burned in their slips and sunk in the harbor. And at this hour, a news conference is getting underway to bless a new fuel dock that reopens for business tomorrow. We'll explore the timetable and the price tag for rebuilding a new Lahaina Harbor. We'll also talk to the Maui Hotel and Lodging Association. Is tourism recovering on the Valley Isle? We'll also hear from an agency that helps ailing families. More than $3 million alone went to help with car payments. Plus, we'll learn how Lahaina's Latino community is faring as they continue to work through red tape.
I am moving to the island of the valley, to Lahaina, Lahaina, where the mountains
you're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. At this hour, the Department of Land and Natural Resources is holding a blessing at Lahaina Boat Harbor. It's to announce the long-awaited reopening of the much-needed fuel dock. The August 8th blaze destroyed 100 boats, sparing only about a dozen. And all the vessels that sank were removed from the harbor bottom as of December. Those companies who were able to stay in business have been forced to make do with refueling at Ma'alaya Harbor. But that is a four-hour trip to keep vessels in Kaanapali fueled, 2 hours to Ma'alaya and 2 hours back. We were out at that harbor recently as boats fired up their engines and were preparing to take passengers lined up for a sunset cruise.
Yep, that's exactly it. Perfect. And he's got one too?
Yeah. Perfect.
We were on the docks with boat captain Riley Kuhn. He's a third-generation co-owner of the business Trilogy Excursions. He says the company is probably Maui's oldest tour operator, and he was thrilled to hear that the fuel dock will be open for business once again.
This is wonderful news for us. Yeah, I mean, that harbor is so vital to so many Maui boaters. Just having a place to put fuel on is going to change a lot of things for the better. Currently, we've been having to take boats multiple hours just to put fuel on at Ma'alaya Harbor. And that's a tremendous amount of effort on our team. And the fuel it burns to get over there and back just to put fuel on, it's quite challenging. So this will just be a big win for us on two of our boats off of Kaanapali Beach.
Yeah, because this means half a day, basically, to do this.
Coming up on the anniversary of the event brings back a lot of emotion and memories. My entire life, I grew up in and around that harbor. You know, my grandpa was a captain in that harbor, my dad, and I am as well. And so, you know, just remembering what that pre-dawn light was like in Lahaina, the smell of the monkey pod and the mango trees, just that amazing town. And then our quirky little harbor, even with all of its goods and bads, is, you know, it was a unique, awesome part of the island. All the keiki jumping off the pier to go surfing, even the homeless guys, the bums hanging out, you know, over the years to become kind of part of our community. You know, all of that is what makes Lahaina Harbor special. And so, just remembering that loss is pretty heavy this week.
And as they were salvaging the boats, bringing the boats up from the bottom, I don't know, what was that like for you seeing, you know, the boat that you lost?
So we lost our Trilogy 6, it was the boat that me and my dad sailed across the ocean from Oregon. We had it built when I was 13. And when I saw that boat sitting with all the other boats in what used to be a parking lot on land, it's hard to describe. It was something out of a movie or I don't even know. But very sad just seeing boats that you're used to seeing floating in our beautiful harbor are now cut up into pieces, just stacked up like dominoes. I also recognize, though, that it was progress, and I was happy to see progress being done. I was really happy to see the harbor getting cleaned out by the time it did get cleaned out, and now you would drive over it, and it looks completely ready for rebuilding.
What would you like to see as we try and build back better?
I just want our harbor back. I would like to see Lahaina Harbor prioritized a little more, and the communications increased about the progress or lack thereof, or just the hurdles that they're going through and the different phases and steps that they have to go through. Communication to boaters is so important, just to keep us in the loop. Without communication, we start guessing and jump into conclusions perhaps, or just not even knowing. So I'll, for me personally, I just want it back, you know, just put it back. And if you can build it with a little bit better by doing some smart decisions, like readjusting some of the pilings or something that's not going to really take much additional time or expense, but it makes common sense, absolutely, you know, build it back a little better. I'm not expecting them to build a new harbor or anything like that. I just want to have our, a place to park our boat again.
We've been told that it's going to be a long process. And so I don't know how you're prepared to weather that out.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of got used to that, what do you call it, that new normal. And we're just saying this is our current operations now. Just this will be what we're doing for the indefinite future. We know Lahaina Harbor will be brought back at some point, but we're not holding our breath. We're not taking guesses on when that's going to be. I would sure hope that it's a year from now that there's solid moves, if not access to the harbor. I would hope. It would seem like it could be done. Getting fuel back is a first major win and a first big step. I've also heard reports that there's even perhaps underground infrastructure is still pretty well intact for a lot of it, including like sewer and water, things that are really important for boaters that a harbor is so useful for. But even just a place to weather a storm, right? That's safe harbor is so important for so many boats. That would be a big win for all boaters in Maui. Again, the fuel, that's a big help for so many. And I'm very, very happy to hear that that's happening.
What are you hearing from your colleagues out there, you know, that are either waiting for insurance money to get a replacement boat? I mean, I'm sure it's hard because nobody knows what the timing of the opening of the harbor really is.
Right. Some of our colleagues, friends, they've purchased other boats because insurance also gives you a timeline to spend the money of insurance money. So some people have already replaced boats, but there's nowhere to park it. So some of them have their boats hanging out in Florida because there's no other place, no other state harbor here in Maui or Hawaii that could accommodate them, and especially here in Maui. And so people are ready to move forward. Some have already got new boats and are arriving on scene with nowhere to put it.
And then how are we doing for business? I mean, I know things are not quite normal yet on the tourism side.
First, I got to just preface and say that, you know, within the last year, we're just grateful. If I had to pick a word, we're grateful. Because A, we didn't lose the ultimate things like so many people lost. People lost lives. People lost their ohana. People lost their entire business, everything. You know, and while we did suffer the loss of a boat and vehicles, and we had no loss of life in any of our staff, any of our ohana. We did lose friends. But, you know, we're fortunate like that, right? So, you know, part of me feels kind of guilty by even saying that we're in business. But businesses, it's okay at best. It's been a hard year. You know, we're going to make it through, we believe. We're not taking any day for granted, but we're trying hard. We're jumping through all the hoops. We're optimistic, and we're continuing on. You know, we've been doing it for now in our 52nd year of operation. We want to be a 100-year company one year. Just got to do it one day at a time. We're looking forward to being one of the boats in the paddle out coming up this Thursday on the one-year remembrance. It's going to be just a really special time for hopefully some closure and grieving and aloha we can share with each other. So yeah, we need the business climate to improve. It's been hard. Again, we're fortunate. We're doing better than some, but compared to pre-fire, we were down a lot.
Have you been able to keep all your workers?
We have been able to keep the vast majority of our ohana and our staff. Obviously, right after the fires, there was a round of I believe layoffs that had to have happened because there was just zero business for a while. We pivoted. We're doing other things like supply runs and helping out with some of the housing needs. And then we kind of slowly opened up again, one boat, two boat. But we are hiring again now. A lot of our staff moved. Some had to leave island. Those who lost their homes, just like so many, made the decision that they had to just leave, maybe from the trauma and the lack of housing. And so we have had a loss of some staff in this last year, which has been hard to see due to the fire.
We've been hearing from Captain Riley Kuhn of Trilogy Excursions, who we caught up with at Ma'alai Harbor. We also talked to Keahi Ho. He's the owner of Gung Ho Sailing. We met him 6 months ago. He happens to be a Lahaina firefighter. And back in February, he shared his experience fighting the blaze that overtook his town and his harbor Like Riley Kuhn, who grew up with his dad around boats, Kiahiho has the ocean under his skin.
I'm a second generation in Lahaina. My father used to drive boats, almost all of the different boats throughout the years. My company is newer, but my daughter was working for me, and she's kind of the third generation that's hopefully I get to pass the torch on to her. Yeah, we've been around for a long time, looking to stay around for a long time.
So what would you like to see happen with Lahaina?
Well, what I see is a lot of really complicated questions all over Lahaina. And one thing that I see is a pretty easy answer is the harbor. It's there. It's always been there. I mean, the harbor, Lahaina was the capital of the kingdom before there was a harbor. It's just a good natural harbor. I would really like to see just a real emphasis on taking this opportunity that we have to start with a clean slate and really get this harbor done, because it really is the heart of the town, and the town will feed off of that harbor once it gets built. I mean, just from the fishermen to the commercial boaters to the regular boaters, I mean, restaurants and other things can all sprout off of that. I mean, the surfing access and the fishing access and the shoreline access. I mean, there's multi-layers of things that come from the harbor. It's really desperately needed for the community, and I think that it will be just the spark that really grows the town from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the heart of Lahaina.
Yeah, I mean, also the ferry. I mean, there's just, and then also for, you know, egress and access. I mean, as a firefighter, I've had a couple of times where the poly is closed because of weather or rain or whatever. We've had to send people around on the Coast Guard or Trilogy boats or, you know, some other boat that is in a person that's in an emergency that needs to get to the hospital. That has been a method that has been used in the past.
How is it down there in Lahaina? I mean, you are at a fire station, and you look down there, and you folks have been, you know, working through this recovery period.
Well, right now, there's the fuel dock is done, which is great. That's a great first step. But other than that, there's a nice, beautiful, clean slate that would be nice to see it get all done at one time, so that we can just move back in. To me, like I said, it's really the heart of the town, and to get it all up and working and to work in there while there's nobody in there is really a great opportunity to get things done efficiently. And I think that we should really take that opportunity.
And then you folks have, what, some ideas of you know, a wish list, right, of how to make Lahaina Harbor better as we bring her back?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to do a little bit of work working with the state, and they've been listening, and we've come around the whole harbor and come up with a great plan, I think, that is just simple improvements all around that should make it more user-friendly for everybody. And as far as I can tell, they're listening, and hopefully that'll all happen. But I'm personally looking to buy a boat, and I don't know what the timeline is. So the worst thing that would happen to me is that I purchase a boat or have one made, and I don't have a place to put it. I don't have the capital to have a boat sitting somewhere that's costing me money that I can't make money with. That'll crush me.
And so you're here for now at this harbor. I'm sure it's not ideal if you would prefer to be back in Lahaina.
Yeah, so we're currently very gratefully operating out of Ma'alaya Harbor, but it is a huge difference from Lahaina. It's been a big learning curve for us. I mean, we're a small sailing company. Lahaina, the winds are 8 to 12 knots typically. Ma'alaya is 25 to 30. So the conditions and the service that we can provide and all the experience and all of the things are way more challenging. When the surf gets big here, this harbor has a whole list of its own challenges that we're all starting to learn now. It's just been, it's really hard for us, but we're adapting, and we can hang here for as long as it takes. But we are very eagerly awaiting to get back to Lahaina.
There's talk about opening up the harbor maybe in phases if they can, and not waiting for everything to be tied up with a nice bow. But I don't know, you just worry that this is going to then drag out?
I would ideally love to see the emphasis put into the harbor, and let's just get it all done. And I would think that there would be some money from the feds. I don't know how the money part works. I would love to see the opportunity taken that while there's nobody in there to really get after it and get it done. If it has to go in phases, then, you know, we're learning to deal with whatever reality is, and we're going to deal with it. But it just seems crazy to not take advantage of the things that, the positives that you have out of the situation. And one is being the entire harbor is empty. You can do anything you want. You can pull in the biggest machinery. You can have full crews going. I mean, you could really get it done efficiently and save money, you know?
So if there was anything you wanted to say to the lawmakers, because they, you know, the DLNR will be going to ask for money for some of these improvements. And they say it's going to cost maybe $30 million to redo it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's going to cost a lot of money, but Lahaina Harbor makes a lot of money. It's got to be one of the highest grossing harbors in the state. And so every penny that goes into Lahaina Harbor will come back 100-fold to the state. So it's a no-brainer, and the money needs to be found, and it's a very easy choice. If I was the owner of the harbor and I had the opportunity to spend the money, I would gladly spend every dime I had to make that harbor go back again.
Anything you want to say just about the history of the harbor and the engine that it is for that town?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in that harbor. It's my just absolute dream place to live and be, and you know, to be able to walk across the street and get on my sailboat and go surfing and go fishing, and all of the friends and family that you grow up with that are just living in that harbor, living that same dream and same passion. And then for us as charter boat captains to be able to share that passion and share that joy that we all grew up with, I mean, I just love it every day. It's just an amazing thing.
We want to see it come back.
Yeah, we want to see it come back. I want to see my daughter run the company, and I want to see us be a third generation thing like Trilogy is over here. You know, I mean, I remember when I was little and they were just starting, and his dad was out working hard, and you know, and I remember that. It was, you know, it's a cool thing.
Lahaina history.
Yeah, Lahaina history.
Totally echo that too, because you know, after Lahaina boats are now finding new homes in Ma'alaya, there was actually one day where I'm like, it feels a little bit like Lahaina again, because there's that boat, there's this guy and that captain, and people we'd see in the harbor every day. And you live different parts of the island you may not be friends with, but you're like harbor friends. And it was like a little bit comforting for a minute. I was like, okay, we got a little bit of our community back.
Yeah, yeah.
You felt that way too?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good to see a few familiar faces around here as we're all dealing with this new madness that's Malaya.
Malaya madness. Malaya and Mala Wharf have been feeling the pressure with Lahaina shut down. We have been hearing from commercial boat captains Keahi Ho and Riley Kuhn talking about the challenges that they've had to overcome working out of Ma'alaya Harbor while Lahaina is out of commission. Some companies operating out of Kaanapali are ferrying passengers out on Zodiacs for snorkeling or sailing tours off Maui during this recovery phase. Boaters hope that efforts to rebuild the economic engine that is tied to the harbor will double down and help the community recover. We will continue our Maui coverage right after this break.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Maui.
Aloha, I'm Anita Rao, host of Embodied, a new program on Hawaii Public Radio. Sex and relationships can be intimidating to talk about, so I am here to lead the way. Join me as we explore our brains and our bodies, a journey that touches down in taboo territory. Embodied is Sundays at 10 a.m. on HPR 1.
It costs money to bring you the news and music you depend on here on HPR. Becoming a monthly sustaining member is the easiest way to support your favorite programs. Donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Before the wildfires, Lahaina was the hub for Maui's tourism industry and Lahaina Harbor its centerpiece. Immediately after the fire, visitor arrivals and spending took a big hit. Mixed messaging from community leaders and survivors sheltering in hotel rooms contributed to the decrease. But now that more than 90% of survivors are out of hotels, what are local government and industry leaders doing to bring tourists back to the Valley Isle? The conversation's Rasa Subiono sat down with Lisa Paulson, the executive director of the Maui Hotel and Lodging Association.
If we could just start out with where we are in terms of the state of tourism on Maui. I know we last talked in March. Has anything changed? Where are we today?
So the June report just dropped today. Maui's down 21.8% year to date, 23.1%, comparative to the state, which is only down 1.5%. We're still compressed because our air seats, you know, that's the only way that people can get here. And so those arrivals are down 16% and the seats are down negative 8.1%. And typically, you know, that's of concern because summertime is one of our peak periods, along with the festive and spring break. And, you know, I don't know if you took a look at the occupancy numbers. Our occupancy overall was 57.5%, down 9.2%.
Is that an improvement from, say, a month after the fires? Have we at least seen an upward trend since the fires?
You know, I think festive season took us all by surprise pleasantly last year. And we do have those very dedicated repeat travelers that come in to spend the holidays here with us. So, you know, it is a possibility that we're going to see that nice bump again this festive season. I'm more concerned about the fall, September and October. And what we used to see was a lot of corporate incentive travel, you know, a lot of meetings. And that's just not on the horizon, the bigger groups. We have smaller groups, but the big guys, you know, like SAP and Pepsi Cola and the big corporate incentive guys that would come here.
I know in August and the days after the fire, I know there were some people with prominent voices on social media saying that Maui was closed. How much did that have an impact on the industry?
To be honest, I think it's still having an impact. That mixed messaging, it takes a while to repair that. And, you know, we still have a small, you know, group with loud voices that are on social. Don't know that it's reaching everybody per se, but, you know, there's little incidences that pop on social. So I would say that the message is still confusing to our consumers, and not everybody just books online. You know, they do research and they look at social and they look at Travelocity and they look at all the ratings and everything. And so we need to work better, and I know that HTA and HBCB are collaborating right now, and they are going to be going out on the road with some political leaders from the state to kind of share the message of thank you for all your support and that we welcome you to come and visit us. So I think that's going to be really important and change the tide.
And just for the record, Maui is open to visitors, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, some things have changed, right? I was speaking to somebody else today concerned about feelings of seeing the devastation. And I shared with them that, you know, our state and county and the Army Corps of Engineers have done an amazing job of putting up barricades to give people privacy on that side, but then also to shield from, you know, what happened. And, you know, the lower road is open. So that's, you know, big for all of us that live here because the traffic has been kind of crazy. So there's small steps. There's, you know, messages of hope too. People are starting to frame out and pour the foundation for rebuilding their homes. And, you know, before a year anniversary, that just feels monumental. And I think those are the messages that need to be shared further and wider, and really just a sense of appreciation because so many people came together to help us out during and after the fires.
I know that Lahaina was the undisputed center of the Maui tourism industry. Has the industry been able to migrate to other areas and kind of carry on as Lahaina recovers? Do we see like pockets kind of popping up around the island to maybe offset the loss of Lahaina?
Yeah, you know, I have a friend that's in commercial leasing, and he said he had the busiest months after the holidays. And I live in Paia, and Paia is booming, Makawao town, and then, of course, Kihei. So I think those areas have absorbed some of the businesses that are able to relocate and, you know, have a nice, healthy cross-section of not only visitors but residents. And I do know that the Mayor's Office of Economic Development is working on a semi-permanent structure where some of the art galleries and jewelry stores can have kind of a semi-permanent location there in Lahaina. And that's in works, you know, more in Kanapali area. So lots of support for our small businesses, but we're not completely there yet. They still need a lot of extra support to help them through.
And one other thing I wanted to ask you about is Maui County taking steps to potentially ban short-term vacation rentals so that there is a long-term rental market for local people and survivors of the fire. If that were to pass, how do you anticipate that would impact Maui's tourism industry?
So, you know, we as Maui Hotel and Lodging Association, we're actually in favor of the bill because it provides housing for our employees. However, we did support the amendment to pull the units that are already in hotel resort designated areas for obvious reasons. If they're already in a hotel resort designated area and they're, you know, paying the transient accommodation taxes and adhering to all the laws, then obviously, you know, we wouldn't want to see a resident moving into that area. You know, it's going to take a while for the bill to move through the county council. They're doing a study on the loss of revenue. And I believe that study results are going to come out in December. So I do see it taking some time, but I also do see it as a benefit in removing some of these units from our residential area because that impacts the way of life for those who live here. And it makes it harder. It makes it harder for families to be able to stay. And then those of us who live in these neighborhoods where there is a vacation rental, it makes it hard every day not knowing who your neighbor is going to be, you know, when you come home. So I'm in favor of it moving forward, and I know it's going to take some time, but I do believe it is for the best.
It's such a tricky situation.
Yeah, and it is tricky, right? Yeah. You know, I recognize there is a traveler out there. You know, if you've got 8-10 family members, you want a house. You don't want to rent 5 hotel rooms. And so, you know, that's where timeshares and other, you know, possibly other units in resort designated areas could help, you know, that have 3-4 bedrooms, you know. But the other flip side of the coin is a lot of people are saying, well, none of these short-term vacation rentals will really get used by employees. And that's not true because we have a lot of employees that are single, or they're a newly married couple, or they're a single parent with a child. And they don't want a house. They just want that apartment or that condo unit. So yeah, there's a lot of dynamic conversation around the whole situation. And how we got here too is, it's a mess. And it needs to be fixed, really, to move forward and protect everybody.
I did want to end on a up note. yeah, I didn't mean to fall into that hole. But I know one of the good stories to come out of what happened on Maui a year ago is how the community has come together to support and help each other. You were honored earlier this year for helping tourists evacuate Lahaina during the fires. Over the last year, have you heard more good stories of how the visitor industry or visitors have made a positive impact on the Lahaina community or fire survivors? Is there a good story that you could share with our listeners?
There are amazing stories throughout. There were visitors that specifically flew in to volunteer their time and help with meal prep and meal delivery. There are a million stories out there. And then the groundswell, you know, the Maui Food Bank received millions of dollars in support. And, you know, so did other organizations, Maui United Way, the Maui Strong Fund. And that's why when our messaging goes out, there also needs to be that thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all your support and your love. And the community as a whole, we just finished Charity Walk and we raised the most money we've ever raised, almost $1.6 million.
Wow.
And we just distributed that to the nonprofits last Friday at a breakfast reception. So lot of beautiful things. This community is so resilient, and it always comes together and takes care of one another. It's one of the things I love about living here. 30 years now, so just very proud to say I'm in this beautiful community. And yes, we are very blessed, and a lot of people came forward and really supported us.
Well, Lisa Paulson, thanks so much for taking the time to talk story with me and share what the pulse is of the tourism industry on Maui. Really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Maui Hotel and Lodging Association's Lisa Paulson talking with HPR's Russell Subiono about the impacts of last year's wildfire on Maui's tourism industry.
Support for HPR comes from the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, committed to supporting Native Hawaiian homeowners and renters impacted by the Maui wildfires. More about its Kanaho grant at oha.org/kanaho grant.
Aloha, this is Bert Lum, host of Bite Marks Cafe. The show has moved to a new day and time, Fridays at 6:30 p.m. on HPR 1. Join us as we showcase the creativity and innovation in Hawaii's tech community. Download past episodes of Bite Marks Cafe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the free HPR app. Bite Marks Cafe, now on Fridays at 6:30 p.m. on HPR 1.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Millions of dollars have gone into helping those displaced by the wildfires, so many nonprofits have been working to get the aid into the hands of those who need it, whether it's getting people fed or housed or replacing cars that burned in the fire. One such agency is the Maui Economic Opportunity Inc. And joining us live is CEO Debbie Kabibi. Thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to be with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You know, we can see some burnt out cars, you know, from the room where we're broadcasting from. And I just have to say, the contrast coming here 6 months ago, the efforts have just been tremendous to transform this area.
I agree with that. It's nothing short of remarkable, really, considering how far, you know, how devastating everything was, and then looking at how far we've come. I know for some people it probably doesn't seem fast enough, but really we have made this county and the state has really helped us make a tremendous effort to move things forward.
Yeah, and from where you sit, I mean, you have been able to administer, you know, a number of different funds to get, you know, the aid into people who really need it, whether they're families or small businesses. Give us the 10,000-foot view.
Yeah, so right after the fires, we wrote a grant to Hawaii Community Foundation and got some money to do rental assistance, and then donations started coming in, and we were very fortunate that people, because they know the work that we do, they were willing to donate money. And so we started trying to help people find, you know, a transitional kind of living situations, because we knew that people needed to get out of the shelters. And we worked with the state to help move some folks into the Airbnbs. And then we also were approached by the state to run a Maui Disaster Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. And so we had that up. Really, by October 1st, we were administering money. We've given out about $12 million so far, helped over 2,000 households and about 6,000 individuals with that particular pot of money. So between the Maui Fires Fund that we had to do rental assistance and then this, we've probably helped at least 3,000 households.
And we chatted before, and you mentioned that there was some like $3 million that's gone out for car payments.
Yeah. So what's really wonderful about this money, the state provided the funding for families, and then Hawaii Community Foundation offered a match money to help individuals, so single couples that don't have any children or just an individual, and they can get rent or mortgage assistance and car payments. So we have seen an increase in the demand for car payment assistance. So it's $5,000 down, up to $500 a month for 4 months. So about $7,000 in total that we can pay toward a car. And we've given out over $3 million in car assistance. And there's still money available. And so I know as people are starting to transition out of some of the short-term housing into other solutions, they may want to tap into those funds. So if they haven't applied, now's the time.
And then most people have moved out of hotels. You know, they're in some transitional housing, and they're probably just getting settled. But, you know, in chatting with you earlier, I know you said that, yes, you can access different pots of money, and there is still money available.
Yeah, so some people were using FEMA or Red Cross assistance, and once that's exhausted and if they still need help, they can come in and apply for this funds. And what it will do is help them transition to the next place, and hopefully that maybe will be the last place they have to move, because I do realize that people have had to move several times because of, you know, most of the housing was temporary.
Right, and I know folks that are in housing now, they say, oh, well, the lease is up in another 6 months, and they don't know where they're going to go after that.
Yeah, so we have case managers and housing specialists in our department that are trying to work with some of those folks that have identified that, you know, they're coming to the end of their lease and where do we go next. And we're fortunate that we do have some landlords that we work with on a regular basis for whatever reason, and they will help us identify housing units. But there still is more people that need housing than there are houses. I mean, I think we're moving in the right direction. You see some solutions coming up, and those are still not permanent. They're kind of interim solutions, but they're longer interim solutions, which I think is important.
And we're hearing about how so many have given so much because the need is great. I don't know, are there any stories that you can think of that you might want to share just about something that maybe moved you during this year?
Ah, gosh, there's so many. But I mean, people call. There's some donors that we've worked with over the years, and after the fires, they called and they said, well, what do you need? And we were just going to write a check, you know, and we said housing, you know, get people out of the shelters and those kinds of things. And then they moved into the temporary housing. And some of the units, they're not really appropriate for long-term living. They're beautiful, but it's really not a place that you're going to be able to have your family stay in for a long term. So, just the community in general has been so generous with time, talent, treasury.
And so, gosh, as we move into this next phase, where do you think the need is?
It's going to be housing, and then trying to figure out I think if we get people stabilized in communities where they know that this is where they're going to be, then getting them back to work, meaningful jobs, is going to be important. We're running a temporary program called Maui National Dislocated Workers Program, and it was set up to help people who had lost their jobs during the fire, or they may have been underemployed before the fires, and they are supporting recovery efforts. So they're working in a lot of humanitarian kind of operations, so Hungry Heroes, Living Pono, Living Way Church, and they're doing a lot of supply distribution. Also, some of them are helping with the Kako Center here on Maui, the Council of Native Hawaiian Advancement, and they're issuing like furniture to people as they're getting places and things like that. So it's a one-year program that they can be enrolled, and then at the end of the year, we're going to help them get into what they call unsubsidized employment. So get jobs in, and there's many jobs available. I mean, we have a driver shortage, right? Bus drivers. So if we can help people get their CDL and get them to drive buses and things like that, I think that's where I see the need, getting people meaningful work that pays a living wage and having a stable place to live.
But it has been really a godsend having these positions where you can employ some of those displaced families who, let's say, lost their livelihood, you know, because of the fire. And it gives them a chance to heal and then maybe learn new skills and then transition to something more permanent.
That's exactly the purpose of it. And I think, the healing part is very important because they're doing something that's meaningful. They're contributing to the recovery, and that I think is good for them. So lots of success stories there. And like I said, some of them were kind of what they call underemployed before that. So they didn't work full time, or maybe they didn't have the skills. So this is an opportunity to enhance those skills and to move them forward. And then I think it's important that we continue to support the small businesses. I know I was listening to Lisa Paulson before you and I were talking, and the Maui Economic Recovery Commission that was started by the governor and his folks, really focusing on sector strategies to make sure that small businesses are able to expand or to rebuild and then expand and thrive, and then also looking at what kind of workforce do we need and how do we prepare people for those jobs.
Okay, and then I don't know, any final thoughts as we come upon this anniversary this week?
I think that we just have to be patient with what we don't understand. There's still people going through a lot of things that maybe not everybody fully understands, and everybody recovers in a different way. And so I think just supporting each other through whatever that road to recovery looks like, I think is really going to be important to help us move forward.
So be patient, be kind. These are our neighbors, our family, our ohana. And so even though if you maybe live on another island and you're just, dropping into town, just be a little bit more cognizant, I guess, of that then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you, again, all the work that you do, that you have done this last year, your whole team. There's still a long road ahead.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Debbie Kabibi, CEO of Maui Economic Opportunity, Inc. It's the Valley Isle's largest nonprofit, which has been working on the front lines, helping with Maui's recovery.
When you support HPR, you support locally produced programs featuring locally produced music, including Kani Kapila Sunday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kani Kapila Sunday. I'm Kaylee Iloma, and I'm so happy to be with you again on a Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. to offer you great Hawaiian music from all periods.
Hawaii Kula Iwi.
Aloha nui kako. You are tuned in to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio 1's Hawaii Kula Iwi. Ovo no ke iyo, DJ Mermaid, Paige Okamura.
And Mauka Tumakai.
This is Mauka Tumakai. I'm your host, Roger Bong.
Your support brings the music of Hawaii to the world. Support Hawaiian and local music programs on HPR. Donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Among the immigrant groups that are still struggling during this recovery phase are Latinos, many who work in the hospitality and service industries, which were hard hit following the fires. With more on that story, here is HPR's Cassie Ordonio. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
So, you were out in the community. What were you hearing?
So, it's a bit of a mixed bag. So, you have some Latino communities who are doing better post-fire. There are some who just recently got into housing provided by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, while other Latino communities and their families, they are still waiting to get into housing, and they say their future is still uncertain.
Are they staying with friends and family? Because, most folks are out of the hotels.
So when I was out in Maui a couple of weeks ago, I got a hold of two Latino families, and one is a single mother of six children, including one grandchild and a dog named Scooby. And then the other one is a single man, but he's staying with his cousin, but he still doesn't know how long he's going to stay with his cousin. So it's a little bit of a mixed kind of thing for the community. But I spoke with Veronica Mendoza-Jahowski of Roots Reborn Lahaina. She's the executive director. And, you know, they were out there in the community, but right now they're navigating new challenges in helping the Latino community.
I think the number of people who are doing fine is a lot smaller than the people who are struggling, unfortunately, in our community. Our community, the state has provided the disaster case management program, which is really wonderful, but there is still a really big need for those disaster case managers to be bilingual and bicultural. And when they're not, despite their best efforts and intentions, because we know that we love the program and we think it's great, but unless those case managers are bilingual and bicultural, these folks are going to continue to fall through the cracks. And then also just looking at what the requirements are for the program and does it actually line up for our community, right? So, for example, are they asking clients to prove that they're employed in order for you to stay in the program? Or maybe another question is, are you penalized if you can't find work? And in our community, unfortunately, they're paid in cash. So is there a way for them to prove their employment? And are they willing to accept alternative forms of proof? And so far, they haven't. And then also, not to mention that our folks, a lot of them are, there's deep-seated mistrust and fears around authority and participation that they feel is very risky. So any little thing like that, like if a case manager asks them, prove that you are employed and they're being paid cash, then that could be enough to never hear from them again.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and Roots Reborn, the nonprofit, they did a data project recently to show their intakes. And it's not an accurate description of the whole entire Latino community, including other immigrant and migrant communities, because they don't really know how many people have left Maui or Hawaii as a whole. And they're still doing their intakes as they go. But they actually accounted for 459 intakes, and that accounts for 320 households and more than 800 individuals. And most of their clients are Latino, so that's 300 plus. The rest are Filipino, Vietnamese, Pacific Islander, Japanese, and even African Americans. And they also found within their immigrant communities is that their monthly household income is only $2,000, and that's really not that much when it's coming from Maui. But the day that I met the single mother named Isabel Quesada was the day that the Federal Emergency Management Agency finally let her know that she and her children will be moving into a stable house in Kihei. And it's a 7-bedroom, 2-bath house, which is pretty unheard of in Maui. So Isabel, when I interviewed her, she was staying at the Royal Lahaina where I first met her. And they were staying in this studio hotel with 2 queen bedrooms. But when you have, let's see, 6 children, including a grandchild and a dog, that's not really that much. She remembers moving 9 times total since the fire. So she was staying throughout the resort area. And she was still working with FEMA because FEMA has this short-term, long-term lease program for Maui wildfire survivors. And she's still working. She works in, it's a cleaning company where she's like contracted to go and clean either hotels or houses and whatnot, depending on the job. But the fact that she's been waiting for almost a year and she finally got into housing a couple of weeks ago after 9 times, it was really exciting for her. And she was nice enough to let me come with her and her family, and they were unpacking and FEMA was there. She signed the lease. I think it was like a 6 to 12 month lease. And then it can be extended after that. But FEMA covers like the cost for them while she's still working. But her ultimate goal is to move back to Lahaina. But when I talked to another person from the Latino community, Jose Alfonso Perez, his situation is different. Right after the fire, he was staying in the shelter for a week or two until his cousin found him. And he's staying with his cousin a little bit outside of Lahaina. But the thing is, like, he wants his own space. But there's just no support for him. That's what he told me.
And gosh, so I know people are hopeful, right? They want to stay in that area if they can, if their jobs are tied to, you know, either restaurants in the area or hotel work.
There is something about Lahaina that really draws the immigrant communities, Latinos, and even the Micronesian communities too. There's just something about that place where it feels like home to them. when I was talking to Isabel, she's very religious. There was something about Lahaina where she just couldn't leave.
You know, one day I was praying, and I love to pray, you know, because it's the way that I contact with God. And I remember I was praying, and God told me, put your hands in the sand. And I put my hands in the sand, and he told me, this is a holy land. This is a holy land. This is belong to you. So bless this land. You know, and I was, God protect this land. I know somebody tried to destroy it, but they cannot. They cannot because we're here. We're going to fight for Lahaina. We're going to, you know, there's people moving. And I was, no, I cannot move. God told me, stay here. Fight for Lahaina because this is our home. And I have love for everybody. Like I say, I feel safe. You know, I know everybody. Like if I go to store or you know, even in Wailuco, they say hi to me, you know, because I know everybody. I'm living here for 23 years. And when I came here, I didn't have nothing. You know, now I have all my kids. And I'm really blessed, thank God, you know, and I learned to love the peace that I have here in the island. I love the ocean, the blue ocean. I've been in a lot of places and nothing like Hawaii, nothing like Maui.
Yeah, the feeling for Lahaina goes deep.
And it does. And, you know, the Latino population has been growing. I believe they make up about 11% of Lahaina's population. And we know when the fire first started, many struggled because there wasn't enough interpreters to help them find their documents, find their loved ones. And even going back to Veronica Mendoza-Jahowski of Roots Reborn, there's still these existing challenges for them as to now they have a history, what services they applied for, what they didn't apply for, what services they're still waiting to get into. And like Veronica was bringing up earlier about these case managers, is that there's not enough that are bilingual or bicultural. So if you have someone who may have the right intentions for the community but doesn't speak Spanish, for example, or isn't from that community, it may be harder. There might be this language barrier in order to help that individual get into housing, for example.
Right, yeah, but there's also the church community. And so hopefully, and I'm sure they are doing what they can to help their members and to help, you know, just our community get back on their feet again.
And the theme of this is that it really takes a community to help a community.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Cassie. We've been talking to HPR's Cassie Ordonio with more on the recovery story of some of our immigrants in Lahaina Town.
Wanna keep on to do my part. On my way, I'm not too far. Take me home to Lahaina.
Well, that's it for us today. We would like to give a big shout out, a big mahalo to Maui Kuia Estate Chocolate for hosting us here this morning for our live broadcast. Care to share your thoughts as we mark the 1 year since the wildfires? Please call our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or send us an email, talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation podcast on our website or on Spotify, Apple, or Google. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the conversation.